So we won't have any class next Monday night because it's Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja. So by the time we get up in the morning and go to the program and finish the feast and finish my rounds, I don't think there'll be very much class.
Oh, on Tuesday.
Tuesday will do. Tuesday will do. Yeah. Tuesday won't be a problem. But Monday will just be too much. So no class next Monday, next Tuesday.
Jagannath Prabhu sent his apologies. He has to vacate his house in the next 2 weeks or two. Not only that, I think Mataji is doing some campaign on Krishna.
Just ring them and tell them to come for the class, and then tell them if they have any problem, and we can help them move. We can all go down the weekend. And, okay. Just a moment. Okay, any points that we discussed from the previous class?
The charm phrase in the womb, did you ask for the question?
Yeah.
The charm phrase in the womb to the world?
Yeah. Any other points?
It was emphasized that sense control is most important for the self-realization. If you can't control the senses, then it's very difficult to make advancement in the future life.
Any other points?
Real knowledge needs to become renounced, and human life is meant for to practice meditation supportively. And Maya is very strong.
Any other points?
You also emphasize that you should watch your vegan, you know, that verse.
We understood the difference between the vegan and a Brahman. Vegan means the narrow-minded person who fails to understand the purpose of the human form of body. Whereas Brahman is broad-minded and he uses the human form of body to develop the human consciousness.
So, is that the literal meaning of Brahman? Broad-minded person?
Yeah.
Yeah, or Brahman means spirit. So, Brahmana. A Brahmana is someone who's realized spirit. That's like the literal meaning, one who's spiritually realized. Broad-minded means, it's an extension from that meaning.
Okay.
By cultivation of knowledge, at the most you can have Brahman realization, but no Bhagavan realization. That's the personal realization.
Any other points?
Maya is not only outside but within ourselves too as well. And that actually we should be chanting constantly that, so that way we don't get agitated, which is the only way, I suppose.
Okay. Seems like it. Right. Any other points?
Srila Prabhupada also is emphasizing Brahman, Ravindu, Swami, Radhiyani, Guru Krishna, Kshalpai, Bhakti, Radhiyani, to Rupa Goswami. This is a very important instruction. We almost learned it.
Bhakti cannot be stopped by anything extra. And one has to be fearing Maya, because it only needs a needle bolt to get in and comes out as a plum. So one has to understand that bhakti cannot be stopped by anything external but internal itself. And we give the mind.
Good point. Any other points?
Yeah. To repay the debts of the virtual master, we have to preach. Most important.
Vigorously. So in the beginning of chapter 29, then Devahuti, she asks Kapiladev to explain about devotional service, which he explains in chapter 29, both mixed devotional service and pure devotional service. This chapter is very important, and your exam, which will be at the end of September, beginning of October, then that will, it's very important that you learn chapter 29. All the chapters are important, but chapter 29 is especially important. And then she asks about the cycle of birth and death, and about the time factor, the influence of the time factor. So the cycle of birth and death is discussed in beginning in chapter 30, where it is described about the living entity performing adverse materialistic activities. And if one performs ugra karma or vikarma, which means very negative material activities, then one will suffer greatly in this material world. One will be taken to the abode of Yamaraj because of his materialistic consciousness. One will be sent to hellish sufferings, and then one will go into animal species. Then one will gradually and eventually have to come back to the human form of life, where one will once again have a opportunity to take up devotional service once again. Then, in chapter 31, it continues to describe the suffering of birth and death by discussing a living entity who has travelled all the way through hellish species, through Yamaraja's court, through the animal species, and then again is injected into the womb of a human mother. And the suffering which goes on within the womb. And then in last night we discussed verses 11 to 21. So in verses 11 to 21 we discussed how the living entity who is a devotee begins to pray within the womb to the Lord and remembers his previous lives and prays to the Lord in a repentant way that he will become Krishna conscious again in the future. So this is not every living entity. It's not that every living entity in the womb, Jiva Goswami explains, it's not that every living entity will pray like this, but a devotee will pray like this in the womb to be delivered by the Lord. And then tonight we'll discuss in verses 22 to 33 how a living entity comes out of the womb, and then how he has to become, how he becomes implicated in Maya once again. The material world is a very dangerous place. It should not be taken lightly. It's very easy to become distracted from Krishna consciousness. And if you become distracted from Krishna consciousness, the result could be repeated birth and death within this material world, which is what the Bhagavatam is describing now. The Bhagavatam is describing all this negativity to make us sober and detached from the material world. Otherwise, we'll become bewildered. By hearing about these negative attributes of the material world, we should become detached so that we become fixed in devotional service. Otherwise, we become bewildered by the material energy and then we go into Maya, and that just means repeated birth and death. And as we've read in this chapter, even just going through the womb again is enough not to come back to this material world. Very intense suffering. And tonight, this will continue this description of coming out of the womb a bit. Any points?
Hello. I have a question. Oh, another clarification.
Yep.
My understanding of conceptions based on what I read, I'm not sure if this question has been asked in past few classes.
Mm.
The soul is in the sperm. The sperm meets the egg. The conception, right? The sperm travels, it meets the egg. Fertilizes.
Meets the egg.
Yeah, I mean it.
Yeah.
Is there a soul in the egg?
No, the soul's in the sperm.
Right, okay, there's only one soul.
Yeah. Yeah. That soul, when the man ejaculates, then there is millions of sperm.
They die, obviously. And
those ones die, but the particular one that enters into and meets the egg, then that is the soul which takes birth and then develops into a particular species.
So the egg is just a lifeless matter?
Yeah. Until it meets the sperm. Unless the egg is...
fertilized.
Yeah, fertilized. But I'm just thinking whether or not the eggs have any life in them themselves. But it's not that living entity. So living entities in the sperm, as far as I understand, the egg is lifeless, it is matter, and is that entity within the sperm which then enters and then becomes the particular living entity.
How would you say that man is like a seed and the woman is like a field? So a field when it's on.
Okay. Lord Kapila continued, the 10-month-old living entity has these desires even while in the womb. But while he thus extols the Lord, the wind that helps parturition propels him forth with his face turned downward so that he may be born. So the living entity within the womb is praying to the Lord. But then suddenly, in the final 2 months, the child is turned upside down. And then suddenly, at the end of the 9th month, then the child is pushed towards the womb to be released like that. So this is a very uncomfortable position, being upside down and being pushed through such a small space. And it's just suffering, complete suffering for the child.
As you said, the head goes down vertically toward the bottom of the knee, but sometimes it doesn't. And then there are very abnormal presentations, like abdominal presentation and presentation of the head in hand, sometimes prolapse. There are lots of difficulties. That's a normal thing, what you're telling is head present. But sometimes the head is not engaged in the bottom part of the womb. So there's difficulty, and then we have to use forceps or something to bring the baby out.
Or cesarean. Yeah, it's a very unpleasant situation.
Very unpleasant.
Bhagavatam says, do not do it again. Don't take birth again. Not worth it. We're here when we join, we say birth, death, old age and disease. But for years I couldn't understand why they kept saying birth. You know, you can understand old age, disease, death, well, that is uncomfortable. But when they say birth, then I couldn't understand it. For years I couldn't understand. But when you study this part of the Bhagavatam, now we're really understanding why birth is so, it's equally as bad as any of the others. Okay. Pushed downward all of the sudden by the wind, the child comes out with great trouble, head downward, breathless and deprived of memory due to severe agony. Little Ma, you'd like to read them?
The word kratena means with great difficulty. When the child comes out of the abdomen through the narrow passage due to the pressure there, the breathing system completely stops. And due to agony, the child loses his memory. Sometimes the trouble is so severe that the child comes out dead or almost dead. One can imagine imagine what the pains of birth are like. The child remains for 10 months in that horrible condition within the abdomen. And at the end of 10 months, he is forcibly pushed out. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord points out that a person who is serious about advancement in spiritual consciousness should always consider the 4 pains of birth, death, disease and old age. The materialist advances in many ways, but he is unable to stop these 4 principles of suffering inherent in material existence.
So what are the points here?
When the child comes out from the abdomen through a narrow passage, due to pressure, the breathing stops. And we have to put the baby down so that he can breathe. Otherwise he can get suffocated also.
As you mentioned that...
I missed one more point. And he loses the memory. Because of that serious pain and difficulty.
So, I was saying, the child in the womb, he constantly prays to the Lord to get him out of the situation. And as it passes through the final time of the gestation period, then he comes out with great suffering, then he forgets all about that. So his consciousness was well developed within the womb, but then it comes out, he does not behave as if he has got that maturity. So how can we reconcile this? At the one end he was praying, but when he comes out, we see practically he has got nothing, little nothing except time.
Because he becomes under the influence of Maya once again, which is his position. The position in the material world is that we forget Krishna. That's the position of being in Maya, or under the influence of the material energy. So in the womb, it's like some special condition where a devotee, it's not, as is explained by Jiva Goswami, it's not all children pray in the womb. It's only a devoted child. But then when he comes out, the nature of the material energy is that it covers you. So he becomes covered for some period of time because he's in such an awkward circumstance. Prabhupada explains this, that when the mind is materially very disturbed, it's very hard to think of Krishna. So there's so much material disturbance at that time, he becomes covered once again by the material energy. But if he's sincere, those that can wake up again in the future.
It is also actually, you know, just described that the elevated Vaishnavas are born. They are very effulgent and they also cry. And all of a sudden, everybody in the village in which the Vaishnava has appeared begins to be extremely auspicious, peaceful, and happy. And when the small Vaishnava child, when he's crying and people goes around and speaks the name of Krishna, and he immediately basically understands Krishna and he begins to smile and stop basically crying. So there is a consciousness still within him. So the advanced devotee child is able to actually retain Krishna within the memory and does not come under the influence of Maya. Like the birth of Sri Srinivas Acharya and Narottam Das Thakur, if you see these things have happened, yeah, they just came out of the womb.
So, as Srila Prabhupada mentions in this purport, in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord points out that a person who is serious about advancement in spiritual consciousness should always consider the four pains of birth, death, disease, and old age. So, this is medicinal katha. In order to become healthy, if one has a disease, one needs two things. One needs appropriate medicine and appropriate diet. So it is pointed out by the Acharyas that this part of the Bhagavatam, which is speaking about the suffering of the material world, this is medicine. Because the medicine cures you of your disease. But then along with the medicine you have to take the appropriate diet. So the appropriate diet is hearing about Krishna's pastimes. So by hearing about Krishna's pastimes, then we become enlivened. Just like when you're sick and you have a good diet, you have some nice prasad, you feel enlivened. So you need some nice prasad, but you're sick, so you have to take medicine simultaneously. But if you don't have some nice prasad, you don't feel enthused. Just like when Prabhupada was in his final days in Vrindavan before he left this world, last 6 months, he could hardly eat or like that. And then the devotee, one of them, Bhakti Churuswami, he was cooking for him, and he made some, the Kavi Rose, the doctor said, make khichdi but no spice, no salt, like that. They served to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, what is this? And he said, oh, Prabhupada, you should only eat bland like that. And Prabhupada said, what is the point of eating? Prabhupada said, I'd rather eat something nice and die than, you know, eat this, you know, salt, no spice, no ghee, no nothing bland like that. So when you're sick, you need some nice prasad. Doesn't mean rich, opulent prasad, but you need something healthy which will enthuse you to get better. So by hearing about Krishna's pastimes, we become enthused in our devotional service. We hear Krishna's pastimes, right, and we become enthusiastic. let me go forward, let me go forward, let me go forward, let me try to get back to the spiritual world. But we must understand, simultaneously, we are sick, which means we have disease. We have the material disease, the frid rog, which means the disease in the heart of materialism. So therefore, because we are diseased, then we need the medicine. What is the medicine?
Hearing and chanting.
No, it's not hearing and chanting. It's hearing about the miseries of the material world. That's why the Bhagavad Gita is speaking in this point about the miseries of the material. It's a different type of guitar. This is different to the hearing Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto. It's very different. It's a different type of guitar. One is the diet, the prasad, which will enthuse you and invigorate you, and the other one is what cures your disease. So because you're attached to the material world, then you have to hear about this type of suffering. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, someone who's serious about spiritual life must contemplate birth, death, old age and disease. If you do not contemplate it, you don't become sober and you don't become detached. I remember one time about 5 years ago, I had to go and see my grandmother's husband. My grandfather passed away and she remarried and she had like a... So he was my step-grandfather, like that. So I had to go and visit him in a like an old age place. And I walked in there, and by the time I walked out, I was feeling very sober, very detached. Because everyone in their place was suffering. You know, people did not have legs, or they did not have, you know, they couldn't breathe properly. They had machines on, and everyone was suffering. So being in that environment, you become sober. Birth, death, old age, disease is just suffering in this material world. So it's an impetus for a devotee to become serious in spiritual life. So we need to hear these things. That's why the Bhagavad Gita is speaking this. So we become detached. So when you get to Krishna's path, when you're better, when your disease is cured, then you can just live on nice prasad. Right? Then you can just read Krishna book all day, all night. Chant Hare Krishna and like that. You don't need to hear this. But we're not on that level yet. We need to take the medicine. Even though sometimes it's bitter, but it cures us. Just like in Ayurveda medicine, most of the medicine tastes disgusting. Right? In Ayurveda, so many bitter types of medicine and so forth, but they're good for you. And do not taste good, but they will cure you. So this may not be so palatable, it may not be so pleasant to hear, but it cures us of our attachment to this material world, so it's necessary to hear it.
Can I tell you my personal example? Before coming to Australia, 1970-71, I was working in the very renowned hospital in New Delhi, and the whole ward was full of cancer patients, all lying on the floor, not even beds. And all crying, agony, this and that. And I was thinking in myself, what is this like? But I didn't know what is the treatment. Only when I came to Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, then I realized this is the treatment. Chanting Hare Krishna. Otherwise, there will be misery. And we can fall prey to anything. Once you come to Western world, you've got money. You can be just lying in the gutter, drinking and that's the actual situation. So Prabhupada has really opened our eyes. What do you have to do? Very serious.
Nice. Any other points?
But when we see the brighter part of the life, it doesn't feel like when you go out and actually see anybody, it doesn't feel there's any misery inside of them, but like some people, they don't have any misery at all in material life. They think they are very happy. I feel we are suffering, like being devotees, I feel we are suffering more than materialists. Not at all praying, they are so happy for sometimes.
My grandfather said, those who say they don't have problems, they lie. That's my grandfather.
So you should listen to her grandfather. The child thus falls on the ground, smeared with stool and blood, and plays just like a worm germinated from the stool. He loses his superior knowledge and cries out under the spell of Maya. And Bhagavatam is very graphic. It's sense about it.
All textual. Everything is textual.
After coming out of the abdomen, the child is given to the care of the persons who are unable to understand what he wants, and thus he is nursed by such persons. Unable to refuse whatever is given to him, he falls into undesirable circumstances. Uddhava Bandhu Prabhu, can you read it?
It is the abdomen of the mother. The nourishment of the child was being carried on by nature's own arrangement. The atmosphere within the abdomen was not at all pleasing. But as far as the child's feeding was concerned, it was being properly done by the laws of nature. But upon coming out of the abdomen, the child falls into a different atmosphere. He wants to eat one thing, but something else is given to him, because no one knows his actual demand. And he cannot refuse the undesirables given to him. Sometimes the child cries first, but because the nurse thinks that it is due to pain within the stomach that he is crying, she supplies him some bitter medicine. The child does not want it, but he cannot refuse it. He is put in a very awkward circumstances, and the suffering continues.
Go to the points here.
We do not know why the baby is crying. What is he wants?
My friend, he is a doctor. He said to me that before the child is even born, the mother gets the milk in the breast. So, now if you relate this thing with our Krishna consciousness, the Lord arrangement is so perfect that before you arrive in this world, your share is already there. So, we don't really have to worry in that sense that what's destined for us is already there. So, his, like what we say, his arrangements are flawless. You just have to become a part of it.
That's cool. Any point, Prabhu?
I was only saying this thing that he is given undesirable things because the nurse doesn't know what he needs. Child wants to go to the mother. Sometimes they are separated also. The child is put in a separate cot, away from the mother. Mother wants the baby, but the nurse says, no, you are not allowed to take baby. You can take only every 4 hours or 6 hours, whatever. So, what Prabhupada is saying is absolutely correct. That instead of giving the mother's milk, he gives bitter medicine so that he can sleep and then forget about it.
Any other point?
Actually, when the child basically comes out of the womb of the mother, he has suffered, he has intensely prayed to the Lord, and his last prayer was that, you know, he would not like to take the mother again. And he has prayed in that womb. When he comes out, so the real demand of his soul is that he does not want to be the father of the mother. Nobody pays attention to the real need of the soul, and Maya continues to dominate.
So as Prabhupada points out, within this purport, the material world is more or less suffering. From the time you are born until the time you die, and then in between being born again, it is just suffering. That is the nature of the material energy. Dukkhalayam. Shashvatam. Dukkha, it is just suffering, basically. So everything we do in this material world, just like when the baby is born, then the baby is crying. Because, as we hear in this section of the Bhagavatam, the baby cannot communicate what its needs are. We can imagine sometimes we may be after a car accident or something like that. Sometimes you're laying in bed and you're in the same circumstances being like a baby. That you cannot have, you don't have use of your faculties, you cannot communicate, and you're just simply suffering. People who sometimes lay in a body cast or who have been in a car accident, they have to lay in bed, and the same thing, they're itching all over their body, and so much discomfort, and the body is aching, can't stand, can't sit, can't eat naturally, can't communicate, can't talk, can't tell them, so it's just suffering. So this is the material world. It is more or less suffering. That's all it is. And if you're not feeling your suffering, then you just wait around patiently and you will suffer in the future. It's not long until it comes. You just wait. This is the nature of the material world. End of point.
Here it says, while the child is with the attributes of the mother, the nourishment of the child is being carried by nature's own arrangement. But previously, didn't we read that whatever she eats affects the child as well in the womb? I mean, if she eats hot plant-based food or whatever, it still affects, right? So, I mean, even at that stage, the child doesn't have a choice.
Doesn't have a choice, but it's just a slightly different point, that's all. You come out and then suddenly, you know, just like you're feeding the child baby food or whatever you feed the child, and the baby doesn't feel like eating that, but it doesn't have a choice. At least when you're older, you can communicate. You can say, oh, I don't feel like eating this, or I don't feel like eating that, but when you're a baby, just, you know, half the time the baby just spits the food and, you know, won't eat the food and doesn't want to eat the food.
They first learn to say no. They push the spoon away as you take it.
Yeah, because they don't enjoy it. They don't want it. That's the material world. Material world is, a lot of our life is getting what we don't want. That's basically the material world. Yeah, what you don't want, that's what you get. That's material life. The Rolling Stones wrote one very famous song about it. You can't always get what you want. That's the material world in a nutshell. You desire so many things, but what do you get? What you don't want, that's what you get. That's the material world. In the spiritual world, what you desire, that's what you receive. Like that. Because you desire Krishna's happiness, then you'll get unlimited satisfaction. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be in kirtan, and when all the devotees becoming fatigued after dancing and chanting for 3 hours, Mahaprabhu would take a seed from a mango and plant it in the ground, and in front of everyone's eyes, then huge mangoes would begin to form. And the mangoes were so big that each mango could feed 12 men. And each mango, they did not have any skin and any pip. That's the spiritual world. In the material world, you feel like mango and you get, what's it called? Durian? Is that what it's called?
Durian,
yeah. Have you had it?
Smoothie,
yes. Yeah, it sure is.
Because it smells, it's a bit gross.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Yeah, it's a big thing.
Yeah.
So you get it from Thailand or Indonesia or something.
Malaysia.
Yeah.
Malaysia's famous for it. I went to Malaysia about 5 years ago and stayed with Sadananda Prabhu and Adi Krishna Prabhu and Malaji. And then they're telling me, oh, durian, you got to try this durian. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, I'll try the durian. You know. So it's like you can't even describe what it tastes like. But in all the hotels in Malaysia, they have signs when you come to the hotel, no durian. Because the thing smells so much, if you keep it in the room, it makes the whole room smell. It takes them months to get the smell out of the room. Do you like it?
I do.
You do like it, yeah. This is why it's hard to make this point, because if you go to Malaysia, most of the people like it, which is very hard to understand.
In India, they have jackfruit, similar to that, I think. I haven't had durian, but jackfruit we have in India.
Yeah, but jackfruit, nothing like durian.
That tastes good.
Yeah, durian's like this other thing, I don't know where it comes from. So, Adi Puru's and Sanan, they're telling me, you've got to try it. So, okay, I'll try it. So then you eat it. And then I ate 3 of them, and I was trying as hard as I could to like it. But you couldn't like it. It was the most strange, unpleasant kind of thing you could ever taste in your life. You know, but all these guys, like, they ate about 12 of them. It was like it was a mango feast, you know. So this is the material world. You want mango, but you get durian, right? Unless you like it, then. You have to change the example.
Very. I gave something to my father when he came here. Like, I know it's something very special to Australia. He can't comprehend the taste. You know, it's not sweet. It's not bitter. It's
which one?
Avocado.
Oh, avocado.
It's very special.
The problem is with avocado is that you have to put a little bit of salt on it to bring the taste out. because in Fiji they have avocados growing all over Fiji, but no one eats them because they haven't worked out you put salt on it. Because I went to Fiji and I was in the Brahmachari ashram and they had mango, they had an avocado tree out the back of the ashram. I said, "That's avocado," and they said, "Yeah," and I said, "Yo, you guys are so fortunate." He said, "No, no, none of us eat it." And I said, "What's wrong?" And he said, "Oh, it tastes, doesn't have any taste." And I said, "You have to put salt. Mm-hmm. Put a little bit of salt and it tastes delicious."
Of course, violet salads.
Sugar also good.
Yeah, you can put some sugar.
Pepper also will be in there. Salt in there.
And a little bit of lemon juice. But basically the material world means whatever you want, you'll get the other thing. That's the basic thing. It's very hard, because when I went to Malaysia, then I ate these durians, and then they asked me to give the Sunday feast class. So it's a very hard place to preach, because you're trying to give the example about this fruit that tastes strange, and they're all looking at me saying, "You know, what are you talking about? This is our favourite fruit." Yeah, they even had durian and ice cream.
It's called the king of fruits in Malaysia.
Yeah.
No.
And in India they say mango is the king. So that's why we follow Vedic culture. No offense, but laid down on a foul bed, infested with sweat and germs, the poor child is incapable of scratching his body to get relief from his itching sensation, to say nothing of sitting up, standing, or even moving. Chaitanya Prabhu, do you like to?
It should be noted that the child is born crying and suffering. After birth, the same suffering continues, and he cries. Because he is disturbed by the germs in his foul bed, which is contaminated by his urine and stool, the poor child continues to cry. He is unable to take any remedial measure for his relief.
So it is a very humiliating situation for the living entity in the material world. And when people get old, they often go through the same thing. They become invalid. They have to sit in their beds. Someone has to change their stool and urine. Oh, that's horrible. This is the material world. What are we doing in the material world? Or just having a place like this? Where it's just simply suffering. And just humiliating. Why do you want to be in a situation where you're like a baby, where you can't control yourself, or when you get old you can't control yourself? It's not pleasant like that. So therefore Bhagavatam is recommending go back home, back to Godhead, where there's none of this unnecessary situation.
So when Vrindam is born, normally I've heard that as soon as a child is born they actually give her a bath to get rid of the impurities and all that. Now they've changed the whole thing. They said you shouldn't give a bath for 3 days or 2 days after she was born.
Why?
It's good for her skin.
Good for her skin.
Good for her skin.
You couldn't understand.
Most of the things in this world we can't understand. In his helpless condition, gnats, mosquitoes, bugs and other germs bite the baby whose skin is tender, just as small worms bite a big worm. A child deprived of his wisdom cries bitterly.
The word Vigata Jnana means that the spiritual knowledge which the child developed in the abdomen is already lost to the spell of Maya. Owing to various kinds of disturbances and to being out of the abdomen, the child cannot remember what he was thinking of for his salvation. It is assumed that even if a person acquires some spiritually uplifting knowledge, circumstantially he is prone to forget it. Not only children but also elderly persons should be very careful to protect their sense of Krishna consciousness and avoid unfavorable circumstances so that they may not forget their prime duty.
So what are the points here?
So it's not difficult to understand why we forget this, because I can tell about myself. If you've been to some tough situation in life, we come into so many things and we make the things in shape, and once that thing is over we get back to square one and we just forget the commitments and the new year commitments that we, for example. So when the test is gone, then we forget the lessons from it.
So Prabhupada makes an interesting point. He says, we should be very careful to protect our sense of Krishna consciousness and avoid unfavorable circumstances so that they may not forget the prime duty. So, this is the necessity of every devotee, is to somehow or other, as Prabhupada says, protect the Krishna consciousness and avoid unfavorable circumstances. So the nature of the material energy is to make us forget Krishna. So we have to mold our life in such a way to avoid unfavorable circumstances which allows us to forget Krishna. This is, every devotee has to make this challenge, take up this challenge. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Sharanagati, Sharanagati means surrender. Krishna says, Mam ekam sharana rajam. Sharana means surrender. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he writes one beautiful book called Sharanagati, which means he elaborates on these six items of surrender. The six items of surrender are two. The first two are to accept things which are favorable for Krishna consciousness and to reject things which are unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. So every devotee, this is the test that every devotee must go through. We have to, sooner or later, reject things which are unfavorable to our Krishna consciousness. And the more advanced you become, the more you're able to reject these things. Just like sometimes devotees say, oh, you know, how do I get through this circumstance? How do I get through that circumstance? My parents put so much pressure on me, or this puts pressure, or I can't give up this, or I need money, I need a job, I need security. So many things, so many things. Sooner or later, the devotee has to reject anything which is unfavorable. Right? Because so many things in this world are unfavorable. They make us forget Krishna. So every devotee has to go through that same test. We have to reject the material side of life. Just like Lord Nityananda Prabhu, I always think of the story of when he left home with the sannyasi. And he left Hadai Pandit and Padmavati. It said that he walked and he did not even turn back. That is the nature of Krishna consciousness. Sooner or later you have to turn your back on the material side of life and just walk away. Reject anything which is unfavorable. So, like, we make so many compromises at this point in time. Yeah, because we have families and we have material obligations and so forth. But at sooner or later, every devotee has to reject everything which is unfavorable and just fully surrender to Krishna. So this is Sharanagati, this is surrender. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, reject things which are unfavorable and accept things which are favorable. Yeah. So there's six items of surrender which are there. Yeah. Those which are anukul means the favorable things, and the pratikul means the unfavorable things. Okay. So we must accept those things which are favorable. Prabhupada explains, sometimes it's difficult for us to accept favorable things for us. We know it's good for us, but it's hard for us to accept those things at this point in our Krishna consciousness. We may not be able to accept everything that we need to accept in order to advance. But the more, once again, the test is, the more we become advanced and serious in Krishna consciousness, then the more we take up devotional principles which are favorable for us to advance until we fully surrender to Krishna and just completely surrender to all of Krishna's desires. What is it? Whatever is favorable, we accept that. Whatever is unfavorable, we reject that. That is the test of Krishna. That's the only way you can advance. This is Sharanagati. If you want to leave the material world, you have to reject it. That's why the Bhagavatam is preaching to us so heavily now, because Krishna wants us to reject the material world once and for all. Where are we at?
29.
With the growth of the body, the living entity, in order to vanquish his soul.
28.
Okay. In this way, the child passes through his childhood, suffering different kinds of distress, and attains boyhood. In boyhood, also, he suffers pain over desires to get things he can never achieve. And thus, due to ignorance, he becomes angry and sorry. Sitaraja Prabhu, can you remember?
From birth to the end of 5 years of age is called childhood. After 5 years up to the end of the 15th year is called Kaubandha. At 16 years of age, youth begins. The distresses of childhood are already explained, but when the child attains boyhood, he is enrolled in a school which he does not like. He wants to play, but he is forced to go to the school and study and take responsibility for passing examination. Another kind of distress is that he wants to get some things with which to play, but circumstances may be such that he is not able to attain them, and he thus becomes aggrieved and feels pain. In one word, he is unhappy, even in his boyhood, just as he was unhappy in his childhood. What to speak of you? Boys are apt to create so many artificial demands for playing, and when they do not attain satisfaction, they become furious with anger, and they learn to suffer.
So what are the points here?
By seeing the sense of activity, it starts then getting the desire for it, and when the desire is new, it goes to grow that for this amount. Ultimately, no peace.
Any other points?
Distress is in every stage of life.
Yeah. Here's the point. Birth, death, old age, disease, boyhood, childhood, youth. Doesn't matter when we go. It says here that the boy, when he's young, then he becomes so frustrated and he becomes angry because it's like that. I don't remember being like that, but I do remember Prabhupada says, in one word, he is
unhappy.
That is the one word which describes the material world. Unhappy. Tukalayam. Ashashvata. So I remember when I was a boy, just being unhappy. Like that. Didn't have this toy, didn't have that toy, didn't have this, didn't have that circumstance, couldn't get what I want. You know? Yeah. Wanted to go here, wanted to go there. Parents said no. You know, why can't I do that? Why can't I do that? Mother makes you wear stupid clothes you don't want to wear. Yeah, I had three brothers, so you know everyone has to dress the same, and then go out and you feel like an idiot. Yeah, and you're thinking, why in the hell does my mother do this to me? Yeah, I've got to dress in the same suit my brother wears. Yeah, three little boys walking down the street like everyone just like, yeah, and everyone look at you like you're an idiot. You know, and then, yeah, and this was and this thing you have getting all these. Like, so this is the material world. Hare Krishna. Actually, I have many happy childhood memories.
Probably your mother thought you were looking smart the way you were dressed. Maybe you thought that she must have thought, well, look at them, I'm proud of these boys.
Yeah, because you're a stupid mother. So you probably did this to your kids as well.
Well, we do the best for the kids. I mean, we don't know. Like, they have no choice. We think what we do is the best for our kids.
Yeah, it's subtle torture.
If you don't like, you get what you don't
want. Yeah, basically. Fun. But I have many happy memories when I was a child. Mainly it's happy, like that. But when I think back, when I relate to this part of the Bhagavad, because I was thinking today, what is the Bhagavad Gita saying here? Because I don't remember being angry. I remember growing up thinking, oh, I don't have this. I didn't get like angry. I mean, some kids obviously do. But I remember just being, you know, going through periods of unhappiness. Because I didn't get that toy, or, you know, the kid next door got this toy that you wanted, and then you got, you know, and sometimes, you know, your birthday comes when you're a kid, right? And you're waiting for your birthday, waiting for your birthday, waiting for your birthday, and then finally your birthday comes, and you open your present, and your parents give you some stupid thing. Yeah, and you look at it and think, well, what was that for? You know, what? And then you have to act like you're happy because you don't want to hurt your parents' feelings. Like that. These are all the things you go through. This is a material world. Very strange place.
So just one realization that comes to, because at every stage we are distressed, we are unhappy with whatever things we have. And when we grow old, we realize, what I was crying for, it was nothing. Obviously, everybody has got some memories that we are so much after a child and we couldn't get it. We are after a bicycle, we couldn't get it. And later on, we realize it was nothing. And it's only when we go to the next stage. So even at this stage, what we are after, maybe down the line, we realize how it was nothing. I read this anecdote from Prabhupada. He was walking the morning walks, and I think it was some Western country, and he was passing by some Disneyland sort of thing. So Prabhupada asked, what is this? He said, it's children, Disney, it's a dreamland for children. Then Prabhupada passed that thing and he showed the big buildings. This is adult dreamlands. It's child dreamland, and this is adult dreamlands. Mm-hmm. So means the difference between adult and the child is the cost of their toys. Mm.
And what did Donald Trump say?
You're fired.
You're fired. Yeah, very, very good. Donald Trump said he's one of the richest men in the world, is it? Mm. One of the richest men in America, I think. Oh, they're very rich men. He said, whoever dies with the most toys wins. And what's the point of that? A useless life. With the growth of the body, the living entity, in order to vanquish his soul, increases his false prestige and anger, and thereby creates enmity towards similarly lusty people. Prima Don, Prabhu, can you remember?
In Bhagavad Gita, 3rd chapter, verse 36, Arjuna inquired from Krishna about the cause of a living being's lust. It is said that a living entity is eternal and as such constitutively one with the Supreme Lord. Then what is the reason he falls prey to the material and commits so many sinful activities by the influence of material energy? In reply to this question, Lord Krishna said that it is lust which causes a living entity to glide down from this exalted position to the above minor condition of material existence. This lust circumstantially changes into anger. Both lust and anger stands in the platform of the mode of passion. Lust is actually the product of the mode of passion, and in the absence of satisfaction of lust, the same desire transforms into anger. On the platform of ignorance, when ignorance covers the soul, it is the source of its degradation to the most abominable condition of hellish life.
So, anger is known as karma nuj. Karma nuj means that which follows calm. Just like we have the name Ramanuj, which is a name for Lakshman. Lakshman is the follower of Ram. So wherever Ram goes, Lakshman is immediately following. And wherever calm goes, wherever lust goes, then anger always follows. So this is the nature of material life. Krishna says karma esha, krodha esha, rajaguna samudbhava. He says to Arjuna, it is calm which causes us to be defiant of God. It is lust which causes us to rebel against God, which is born of Rajagun. Now, Rajagun is active. The mode of passion is active. The nature of the mode of passion is that it must be controlled and harnessed and elevated to goodness, or it will degrade to ignorance. Right? It has to be one or the other. Because the nature of goodness and ignorance is they are not so active. People in goodness are very peaceful. They're not so active like that. Not that they're not active, but they're very peaceful, not agitated. And the mode of ignorance is also like that. It is not such an agitated mode. So like a inert mode. So when one is in the mode of passion, if one becomes too lusty, then what will be the result? Then he would degrade into, if he doesn't control it, he will degrade into the mode of ignorance, into anger, and just frustrated and resentment. And then, if one gets into this kind of consciousness at the time of death, then he goes into lower species. So Krishna says, lust, anger, and greed are the gateways to hell, into lower species of life. So therefore one must control these things. Now how to control them? We have to read the next paragraph like that. So, Usha, can you read the next?
To raise oneself from hellish life to the highest position of spiritual understanding is to transform this lust into love of Krishna. Sri Narottama Das Thakur, a great acharya of the Vaishnava Sampradaya, said, Karma Krishna Kamarpane. Due to our lust, we want many things for our sense gratification, but the same lust can be transformed in a purified way so that we want everything for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anger can also be utilized towards a person who is atheistic or who is envious of the Personality of Godhead. As we have fallen into this material existence because of our lust and anger, the same two qualities can be utilized for the purpose of advancing in Krishna consciousness, and one can elevate himself again to his former pure spiritual position. Srila Rupa Goswami has therefore recommended that because in material existence we have so many objects of sense gratification which we need for the maintenance of the body, we should use all of them without attachment for the purpose of satisfying the senses of Krishna. That is actual renunciation.
So what are the points made here?
Goswami talks about Yukta Vairagya. He says anything can be used for Krishna's service. Even anger, what he has, atheistic or envious people of Krishna. So in this Kali, we can use anything basically. From we can watch television, use television card, all for the service of Krishna.
It was just the word dovetail. Very dovetailing everything for Krishna's service. And you're saying is six robbers on the highway. Lust, anger, greed.
Yeah, it's from Raghunath Das Goswami, Mana Shiksha.
On our own, we cannot port on the lust. We have to transform our anything to Krishna. That's a short way to port on the lust.
So this is called Yukta Vairagya. This is taught by Rupa Goswami. Yukta Vairagya means you use anything and everything in the service of Krishna, which can be used. Certain things you cannot use in the service of Krishna. You can't eat meat in the service of Krishna, so therefore reject that. But those things which can be used in the service of Krishna, you use them in Krishna's service. And by using them in Krishna's service, then you purify your attachment to those things. Prabhupada makes this nice example in this purport. He says, Srila Rupa Goswami has therefore recommended that because in material existence we have so many objects of sense gratification, in the material world we have so many attachments. We want a wife, we want children, we want a husband, we want wealth, we want home, you know, we want these things, right? Sense gratification. So Rupa Goswami says, he's recommended because we have so many objects of sense gratification which we need for the maintenance of the body, to make our mind peaceful, to make our body satisfied and so forth, then we should use all of them without attachment for the purpose of satisfying the senses of Krishna. So this is called Yukta Vairagya, right? In the beginning you want it, right? So you get it, right? But then that thing which you've now got, now you have to become detached from it and use it in Krishna's service. Now that is called Yukta Vairagya, and this is how you purify your consciousness. So we need it because we're attached to it, but then you get it, but now you have to become detached from it and use it in Krishna's service, and gradually develop full detachment. So this is called Yukta Vairagya, because our original position is to love Krishna. But that perverted, that love becomes perverted in the material world as material lust. In this material world, that original love for Krishna becomes manifest as material lust. Now, attachment, that original attachment was to Krishna. But in the material world, that same attachment to Krishna becomes attached to so many material things which we want to enjoy for ourselves. So Yukta Vairagya means you purify it by developing your love for Krishna. You're attached to something, you know, just like you're attached to the opposite sex, you're attached to your wife or to your husband like that. But now you have to learn to base that relationship or to transcend that relationship, as Bhaktivedanta Swami teaches, he forms a love triangle, which means Krishna is the actual object, right? And the wife or the husband is simply encouraged. We simply encourage our partner to serve Krishna, and together we serve Krishna, and that way we purify that attachment by putting Krishna in the center. Krishna in the center. Continuously put Krishna in our center of our consciousness, and then that lust becomes transferred into love. This is the methodology. This is Yukta Bhairagya. By such ignorance, the living entity accepts the material body, which is made of five elements, as himself. With this misunderstanding, he accepts non-permanent things as his own and increases his ignorance in the darkest region. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that the material world is all based upon suffering. And why do we suffer? Because of this consciousness of aham mameti. I and mine. As soon as you think in terms of I, then you think in terms of mine. And as soon as you think in terms of I and mine, then you begin to suffer in the material world. Because the material world is always suffering when one thinks in this consciousness. As long as one has this consciousness of thinking of I and mine, then you suffer. But when you transform that consciousness from I and mine, right, and place the emphasis back onto Krishna, right, and the spiritual master, the Vaishnavas, like that, then your consciousness becomes transformed. You no longer suffer, but you experience anandam buddhivadanam, an ever increasing ocean of bliss. For the sake of the body, which is the source of constant trouble to him, and which follows him because he is bound by ties of ignorance and fruitive activities, he performs various actions which cause him to be subjected to repeated birth and death. So Prabhupada points out within the purport that the kind of work which is done in this material world, Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita as karma bandana. Karma bandhana means work which binds us. Means we become bound in this material world. So, therefore, as Krishna recommends within the Bhagavad Gita, jagyatat kamanonyatra, that you have to perform your work as jagya. Jagya means it must be done for the pleasure of Krishna. So that work which binds can also liberate. If you do it for yourself, then it binds. If you do it for Krishna, then it liberates. Same work. But that everything you do, if you do it for yourself, you stay in the material world. If you do it for Krishna, you become liberated from the material world. And Prabhupada points out in the second paragraph that this material world is simply based upon the blind leading the blind. That is Prahlad Maharaj's teaching in the seventh canto of the Bhagavad Gita. He says that this material world is simply blind people leading blind people. The leaders are all blind because they think in terms of aham mameti. So then everyone who follows them, Prahlad Maharaj explains, is just like following a blind person. When he walks into a ditch, because you're also blind, you just walk into the ditch as well. Right? He's just heading towards hellish life. You're also just heading towards suffering and hellish life. And that's what the material world is based on. Because all the leaders are doing the wrong thing, and everyone thinks, oh, they're doing it, so let us all follow. Just like sheep. Sheep do not think, they just follow. Just walk around. You know, wherever one sheep goes, they all go that way. Doesn't matter if it's good or bad, but if that's where he's going, then oh, yeah, we will follow. That's what material society is like. People don't think so much. Just everyone else is doing it, so we have to do it. Right? And as soon as you step aside from the norm and you become a Hare Krishna, they think, oh, that's very strange. It's very, you know. I remember when I became a devotee, all my family, they criticized me. Why are you doing this? And so different, so strange. Like that. And what's the alternative? The alternative is just following along. And then what happens when you follow? No, it's, It's futile. Yeah. It's just futility. You just see, you know, the way everyone else is going. Where's it going to? Hardly anyone stops and thinks. Everyone else just follows. And then someone stops and thinks they're a devotee. Right? And then they join the other devotees. You know, we'll go in a different direction. You go in that direction, that's your choice. But we'll go in this direction. If therefore the living entity again associates with the path of unrighteousness, influenced by sensually minded people engaged in the pursuit of sexual enjoyment and the gratification of the palate, he again goes to hell as before. So, we discussed this last night also. Material life is based on trying to satisfy the tongue, the belly, and the genitals, which are in a straight line. And if you try to satisfy one, the others will become agitated. That is the nature of the material world. But that's all material world is based on. Let us eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. So let us just engage in trying to satisfy our tongue, our belly, and our genitals, and then our life is successful. But the nature of this material world is, as Srila Prabhupada says, everyone has a choice to associate with materialists or with saintly persons. If you associate with materialistic people who are addicted to that activity, you will also get their destination. But if you associate with saintly persons who learn to control their senses and they become Goswamis, which means they control their tongue, control their bellies, control their genitals, then you become liberated by following their path. So it's all based upon our association, which we keep. Kapila Devas taught this in the 25th chapter. One must associate with saintly personalities. By associating with sattvas, this is the doorway to liberation. By associating with materialists, that is the doorway to hellish existence. Like that. And the final verse for tonight. He becomes devoid of truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, gravity, spiritual intelligence, shyness, austerity, fame, forgiveness, control of the mind, control of the senses, fortune, and all such opportunities.
Mahaprabhu, can you repeat? Those who are too addicted to sex life cannot understand the purpose of pure truth, nor can they be clean in their hands, not to mention showing mercy to others. They cannot remain grave, and they have no interest in the ultimate goal of life. The ultimate goal of life is Krishna or Vishnu. Those who are addicted to sex life cannot understand that their ultimate interest is Krishna consciousness. Such people have no sense of decency, and even in public streets or public parks, they embrace each other just like cats and dogs and pass it off in the name of lovemaking. Such unfortunate creatures can never become materially prosperous. Behavior like that of cats and dogs keep them in the position of cats and dogs. They cannot improve any material condition, not to speak of becoming famous. Such foolish persons may even make a show of so-called yoga, but they are unable to control the senses and mind, which is the real problem of yoga practice. Such people can have no opulence in their lives. In a word, they are very unfortunate.
So what are the points there?
Prabhupada, well, before he came to West, he has already completed the third canto of Kalakala.
Only the first canto.
First
three volumes. First canto, that's all he came to the West with. This is all after he came.
Because some examples, it looks like more from the Western thing, because when he was there.
He'd already been here. Second canto, third canto, this is when he's in the West. Because he was lecturing on the teachings of Kapila Deva. So he was translating this after he came to Wisconsin.
So. Those who are addicted to sex life cannot understand this.
So this is the nature of the material world, that if one becomes a goldust, a goldust means a servant of the
senses.
So it means a servant of the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. So if one becomes a gold dust, then he can never understand Krishna. This is explained by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Raghunath Das Goswami, as we explained last night in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said, one who becomes addicted to following the demands and the dictates of the tongue, the belly, and the genitals, he'll never understand Krishna. And as it explains in this verse of the Bhagavatam, he also becomes materially poor. No prosperity will come. Because the Bhagavatam says that when you become addicted to trying to enjoy sense gratification, then you lose truthfulness. Right? People stop being truthful. Right? They stop being clean. Right? They stop being merciful. They stop being grave. They stop being spiritually intelligent, shy, austere. They lose their fame. They get a bad reputation. They lose forgiveness, control of the mind, of the senses, all their fortune, and all opportunities. So when you can become absorbed in sense gratification, gradually, you diminish all of your pious merits. Just like some people, they're born in this world, in the modern world, and they're born in very wealthy situations or very famous situations, but then they use it all for sense gratification, and then all their good qualities deteriorate. And you see they just become less and less and less, and you see so many of them. You know, so many of the famous people, and they're just developing, you see their lives are just going crashing like that because of sense gratification. So one controls his senses and focuses on Krishna, then one can attain Krishna consciousness and develop auspicious qualities. Is what the Bhagavatam is teaching at this point. Okay, so we'll stop there. And yeah, next Monday no class, next Tuesday we'll have class. Okay. So this Sunday is Sri Krishna Janmashtami. This is the most auspicious day of the year. So this is the day where we get an opportunity, one day of the year, where we can practice Idam Krishnaya Idam Na Mama. Everything for Krishna and nothing for me. This is the spirit of Janmashtami. So this one day we can purify our consciousness by trying to fully surrender to Krishna. And if you do it on this one day you just give up every other obligation, engagement, everything is put aside, and the only obligation you have is to serve Krishna. On Janmashtami and also on Vyasa Puja Prabhupada. And by doing that you'll purify your consciousness so much. And come so much closer to Krishna. Krishna will reveal himself on this day. Most auspicious day of the year. So we'll see you all on Sunday at Mangalati. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah. Yeah.